Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, hi, folks. How are you? Happy New Year to you. Hope you had a great holiday season. If you haven't listened to us since the new year began, hey, this is January 4th. You know, we're welcoming back a very interesting chap that we had as a guest here a week or so ago, and I'm really thrilled to have a chance to talk to him. We talk to people from all walks of life on these broadcasts, as you know, and people who do all kinds of things in their careers. What we're finding out, and what is really interesting, and this could be, you know, of importance to you, I don't know what you do or where you are, but a lot of people who are very smart and in the careers that they've had are now being utilized as expert witnesses in court cases. And there are teams of lawyers who are always looking for people who are very bright from their field to represent a legal case in which their testimony could be a key in determining whether the person who's being sued was whether it's a person or an individual or a company or whatever, you know, is liable. And, I mean, when you come right down to it, we could be talking about a doctor. We could be talking about a surgeon. It could be a race car driver whose testimony could be utilized to help determine how an accident happened and to reconstruct an accident and how it could have been avoided. Because race car drivers are pretty brilliant in that area, you know. It could be a mechanic who could help determine what happened in a vehicle that may have had, you know, led to an accident in which maybe somebody lost their life. Who knows? Could be an artist, a chemist, you name it. In every field, there is someone who has a lot of experience and could be a great expert witness in a court case. And our guest is certainly a person like that. His name is Gary Kilpatrick. As I say, he was here a week or so ago, but he's a highly sought-after forensic engineer, and that includes a lot, folks. But anyway, he's the founder and the owner of what is known as the Kilpatrick Group, and Gary provides his forensic engineering services to legal and insurance clients to offer contract and consulting engineering services to industrial clients in project management, product design, process design, machine design, and tool design, and also as an expert witness in court cases. It's pretty amazing. He has over 20 years of industrial work experience. Not only does he determine the cause of an accident with conscientiousness and forthright honesty, but the details of his investigation are often used in court as testimony in litigated matters. Now, he talked a lot about it last week and explained his story, but for those of you who didn't hear him, I'm going to get Gary to reiterate a little bit about what his career is like and exactly what he does and to explain some certain things. So Gary is based in Jamestown, North Carolina, where it's a rainy day, unfortunately, and he's on an important call today, but he's in his truck, his trusty truck. And Gary, let's just say good morning. How are you? Nice to have you with us. How's it going?
Good morning, guys. How's it going today?
We're doing good, and I hope you're doing. I understand it's raining there, raining cats and dogs, as they say. But you know, the sun will come out one of these days. Hopefully, the sooner the better. All right. I want to begin by asking you to explain. And a lot of people really don't understand what the name forensic engineer means. So tell me, what is the difference between, you know, another thing too, I know, I used to always hear where they talk about an engineer, I thought an engineer was a guy who drove a train, you know, but engineers are, they do a lot of things. What's a forensic engineer? How do you explain that?
Essentially, the textbook definition of a forensic engineer is someone who applies the art, science, and methodologies of engineering and the scientific method to answer questions of fact in the jurisprudence system. And the term questions of fact means evidence. And so that's to that we provide to a, a client attorney or insurance company an investigation to figure out what happened in some sort of event, to write an expert report, to testify at deposition and trial, and also to act as an advisor in alternative dispute resolutions like mediations, arbitrations, and so forth.
Well, I know when you got into this field, the field of engineering, I'll bet you didn't think this is something that you would be doing later on in your career. I would bet that would be the case. Would I be right?
That's correct. I read an article in a newspaper, in our local newspaper, many, many years ago, well over 20 years ago, where a civil engineer, a PhD-level college professor at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, was teaching a one-day seminar in Introduction to Forensic Engineering, and I've actually still got the textbook in my library today. And so I said, that's pretty interesting. So I paid the fee and drove to Charlotte and sit through this one day, and I was absolutely fascinated with it. And at the end of the case, at the end of the course, the back of the book has a list of professional societies that cater to people like me, or, you know, forensic engineering and so forth, one of which was called the National Academy of Forensic Engineers. And so I made contact with those guys and spoke to the founder of the organization. His name is Marvin Spector. And so he encouraged me to join, and I told him that I would like to pursue this field and see what it was like, to see if it would be something that I could do. And as a matter of fact, it was, because I have 20 years of industrial experience and you know, all the mathematical skills to figure things out, and that's kind of how it got started.
Well, that's pretty darn interesting. Tell me a little bit about your background so that people listening to us can get a grasp of what it is you have done in your career. When you first started, I mean, did you go to school and study engineering per se, or what? Just give us a sketch.
Well, when I graduated from high school in the mid-70s, I really didn't, you know, I was so young and inexperienced, I really didn't know what I wanted to do for a living. So I simply just got a job and went to work, and it was probably one of the best educational experiences I could have ever got. I went to work in furniture for about 3 years, roughly, and I was a shipping clerk, loaded and unloaded tractor-trailer trucks. I worked in their machine shops for a while to machine wood parts for case goods, and I left that business and went to work for the company that really changed everything. It's called the Clark Equipment Company. Clark's claim to fame is that they invented the forklift, which they did. They invented the front end loader, which is called a skid steer. And at that time, they were the main competitor to Caterpillar. They made a lot of design and built a lot of things that Cat did. The only thing that they didn't make was bulldozers. And so I worked in every major operation in that plant, from assembly. They designed and built they designed and built drivetrain components for rough terrain cranes and rough terrain forklifts, and that would be the drive steer axles, the differential gear trains. It's a big carrier that has a ring and pinion gear in it, and also these big transmissions for these machines. Some of these machines, the transmissions were big enough, it was like a refrigerator. You could literally step up inside of it. And so I worked in assembly. I've worked in cast iron machining all of these various components I just mentioned, gear machining with spur gears, high poured ring and pinion gears, and gear heat treat, shaft spline rolling, and just about everything in that operation. I was also a licensed forklift driver, and I drove, I would drive forklifts from time to time throughout the week. Sometimes a material handler would not be available to grab a pallet of parts for the machines I was working on, so I'd go jump on a forklift and do it myself. Every once in a while, someone would be out sick or be on vacation for a week as material handler, and they would ask me to drive the forklift and be a material handler for a while. And so that's what I did, and I got to meet several of the design engineers that sat in the office, and they were very nice to me. that come out and talk to me and other people. And they were, and Clark was really the impetus, and they were the ones that inspired me to become a mechanical design engineer.
Well, that's really, you know, it's quite a story. It's pretty fascinating because I agree with you. You know, you probably got your education on the job. I know you are a mechanical design engineer. You're a licensed professional engineer in over 12 states now, and a board-certified diplomatic forensic engineer. That's a DEF. Through the National Academy of Forensic Engineers. And you have, obviously, as you pointed out, a lot of extensive engineering education, training, and experience. One thing, and I was reading, looking at your website, you have a really fascinating website, and I want to point this out. Anybody's interested in Gary's story and wanting to get in touch with Gary, go to his website. It's the KilpatrickGroupPA.com. You can spell Kilpatrick. I'll do it for you. KilpatrickRick. Simple. The KilpatrickGroupPA.com. What's PA stand for, Gary? Do you know the group PA?
It stands for Professional Corporation. My company is licensed through my engineering licensing board, and so you can either choose PA or PC. Means Professional Corporation. A lot of people choose PA, and that's what I chose to do is PA. You know, that's what it stands for.
All right. Anyway, one of the things I'm fascinated about is you know a lot about off-road vehicles and certainly and especially motorcycles. According to this, you've owned and operated over 15 motorcycles today, and you have a 2012 Harley-Davidson CVO Road Glide custom, I guess that's a description of the Harley-Davidson. Anyway, you obviously know an awful lot about motorcycles. You were, like I mentioned before in the introduction, that race car drivers sometimes serve as expert witnesses in court cases because of their knowledge about automobiles and how they function, you know, especially on a racetrack. You've got that kind of information and knowledge yourself, and that's why you are called upon to give your expert testimony and your knowledge in accident cases that involve, it could be off-road vehicles, all kinds of vehicles that you're so knowledgeable about. That is an absolute fact. Am I right? Agree with me,
that's
please.
Correct. that's correct.
So let me ask you how you got into, as you said, you took a course in this, but you've been in this field for over 20 years as an engineer, doing so many different things. It's really fascinating to hear what all you've done. What about now? How much time do you spend, or often are you called upon to consult with an insurance company or a law firm about a case, and it could be any kind of a case. I guess you could describe for me the kind of cases that you called upon. Talk a little bit about it.
Well, the case, I call it my wheelhouse, you know, in my wheelhouse, which is the areas where I practice are, of course, motor vehicle crash reconstruction, especially with motorcycles and all-terrain vehicles, and also what's known as ROVs, recreational off-highway vehicles. And I also am heavily involved in industrial accidents, dealing with forklifts. I'm probably one of the leading forklift experts in the United States based on what I told you a while ago with my experience with Clark and my expertise in forklifts. I'm also a crane expert because I used to build parts for them. And this deals with, and I'm also OSHA certified. I'm an OSHA expert because we have to be that way and have those credentials when OSHA is called upon in these cases. Sometimes if you have an industrial accident where a compliance safety officer comes out to do an investigation, the officer will write what's known as a citation package. And a lot of the attorneys call it, you know, the OSHA report, but it's called a citation package. And it lays out everything that the compliance safety officer did from his interviews with people involved, witnesses, and so forth, and even fines that were laid out and applied to the company where these people were employed. And so I'm also involved in amusement park ride accidents, so not so much from a safety standpoint, dealing with being employed in an amusement park setting like Carowinds, for example. I get involved with the machinery. If a machine fails for some reason, then that's when I get involved to try to figure out what caused the failure. Let's see. That pretty much
question.
Wraps it up.
I wanted to ask you a question. We hear about big accidents that happen. Okay, there was one just a couple of days ago in Charlotte, where scaffolding and a building that was being repaired, I guess, I don't know if it was being repaired or being built, the scaffolding collapsed and three guys were killed. They fell a large distance. I don't want to mention one because I'm not sure exactly what it was. I read somewhere 70 feet, but I'm not quite sure. And then part of the wall fell on top of them. This is a kind of a situation where someone like you with knowledge of in that area, scaffolding and construction area, would be called in, could be critical, because there will definitely be lawsuits involved in a case like that. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Scaffolding, I'm also a ladder expert dealing with aluminum ladders, fiberglass, and wood ladders. I wanted to mention that, too, because I get involved in those ladder cases. Scaffolding is, it depends on how the thing's designed. They're assembled by pins, and you have different elements on there that rotate to lock things into place. And I know I'm familiar with what you talked about, this case in Charlotte, because I just heard about it myself, and it's just a terrible accident. So you can bet that some lawsuits are going to be filed, and they'll be retaining people like me to go down there and do an investigation.
Yeah, exactly. Scan your memory and give me an idea of what you consider some of the more interesting cases that that you've been called in. Now, and when I say called in to work with, you law firms call you? Do insurance firms call you? Who would be the typical call you? How would you answer that?
Usually it's lawyers, either plaintiff or defense lawyers. The defense lawyers are going to be working for an insurance company, and they're going to try to be defending their case so that whatever they're going to be paying out is going to be minimal. You know, they don't want to have to pay out a whole bunch of money if they don't have to, and that's where I get brought in as a defense expert for an insurance company. I've been involved in this various cases, but I get it's mainly about a 50-50 split for plaintiff and defense work. I'll take the case either from a plaintiff's lawyer or a defense lawyer. It just depends on who calls me. And the insurance company, I have had insurance companies call me, but they always have me. They'll always have the lawyer that's representing them to call me and work through the lawyer.
Well, take a case example that you worked on, and take me through what is involved from your perspective. Once you get contacted by either, it doesn't matter whether it's plaintiff or defendant, and you agree to contribute your knowledge, what happens? What do you do? What are you called upon to do? Give me an example.
Well, the first thing, what I want to do is first just explain to you a little bit how the court system works. I'm not a lawyer, and I can't give, legal advice, but based on my experience and based on the training I've got, I can bulletize this and for the audience to let them know how this works. When you have an injured party that has been injured, let's say, this accident in Charlotte would be a perfect example. Whoever died as a result of this scaffold collapse, the people, the relatives, I guess the estate of this person is going to look for a lawyer to represent them in being wrong. And so they will approach a lawyer or call a law firm, and they will go in and talk to the lawyer about this case. If the lawyer thinks that the case has merit and he thinks he's going to be able to help them, be their advocate and represent them at trial in court, then they will sign a contract. And this is per the bar, so the North Carolina or any other state bar, they require or they highly suggest that the law firms work under contract agreement. So once the ink is dry on that contract, then the law firm will create the injured party, which is called the plaintiff. He will create what's known as a complaint, and they lay out they identify the parties, who the defendants are, and they type up the allegations as to what they think happened. And this thing is a living document because they can make changes to it as time goes on if they learn something else about it. So this complaint is then filed and served as a summons to the defendants, and then the defense has 30 days to hire counsel, which is a lawyer, to represent them, and then respond, which is called the answer. And after that, right. Then the lawsuit, then you have all this stuff. That's when the discovery, once the answer is served and answered, once they answer through the courts what they're gonna deny or whatever, admit or deny, then the discovery process takes place. And that's when each party starts asking questions. They'll hire people like me to go and investigate an accident for evidentiary purposes and so forth. And then once all this work has been done, and it could sometimes take years, then that's when people like me and the witnesses and everybody else, they are deposed in deposition to give either expert testimony or be a fact witness. And then once that goes through and they don't settle the case, then it'll go to trial. That's pretty much how it works.
What I want to know is how much work is involved from your part? What do you have to do when you're contacted by by a law firm and say, look, this is a case, so-and-so, for example, take the case in Charlotte where scaffolding fell down and people were killed and a wall came down on top of the workers who were on the scaffolding. What would you do? What would you have to do if you were called in to analyze what you think happened there? Give me an idea.
Well, the attorney would call me and introduce himself, and he's going to lay out this case as he sees it. And if I think it's the type of case that I can help him in, I've got to be qualified by education, training, and knowledge in order to do that. If it's outside of my area of expertise and education, then I won't take the case. But if it is, I tell him that I'm not going to promise him anything. As a matter of fact, my contract agreement states that I don't work for a contingency. I don't work on a contingency basis, and I base all my opinions on facts, on the facts of the case, everything that's presented to me, and my opinions could be contrary to his position. So I never promise him anything, but I tell him that based on what I'm seeing, I should be able to give him an opinion. And so, and at that point in time, they sign my contract agreement. And once the ink's dry and he sends me a retainer, most any expert requires a retainer. My retainer is $2,500 and it's non-refundable. But, even though it's non-refundable, the work that I do will more likely than not earn up all that retainer. My billing rate's $200 an hour, so essentially 12 and a half hours of work. And so they start sending me case documents. They'll send me the pleadings, which is the complaint and the answer. They send me interrogatories, which is documents that where one side is looking for information from the other side, and the interrogatory is a word that comes from to interrogate. And they interrogate each other and question each other about facts and information that they need. They also request production of documents that can be wide-ranging, all kinds of stuff, depending on training and so forth. And so once I get all this stuff in, a lot, and this includes depositions from witnesses, from people who are injured, and so forth, I go through all this stuff. And then I set up a time to meet the attorney at the accident site, wherever that is, so I can do an inspection, take my photos, measurements, and all that stuff, all of that type of stuff. And then once I do all of this stuff, I should be in a position to render an opinion. But I may have to do some engineering calculations, some analyses, some design type work to determine why these things failed. And then once I get all that stuff done, then I can give him an opinion of what I think happened. And that's kind of, and then after, at that point, then opposing counsel is going to want to retain, they're going to want to depose me and question me in deposition as to, you know, how I come up with my opinions. And they want to see all the work that I've done, all the documents I've reviewed and so forth. And then if this case does not settle, then I will have to go to trial and testify as an expert in court in front of a judge and a jury.
Have you done that? Testify before
the
court before the jury, where a lawyer's trying to twist you and get you, you know, get you confused. Does that happen? You know it happens.
It does, but I don't let him do that. You know, if he tries to steer me down a line of questioning to where he's trying to get me to state something that is not my opinion, then I'm going to stop him. I'm going to tell him, you know, I'm going to say you're asking me a line of questions that I can't answer because they're contrary to my opinion. And he says, well, what is your opinion? And then I'll state it. But you have to be very careful in deposition. The best way to conduct, testimony and deposition is trial, is answer the question as briefly and concisely as possible and don't volunteer any information one way or another. Because even though the expert might think, well, oh, I can say this because I think it'd be good for his case, and then the lawyer don't want him to say that, you know, then there's going to be some problems. So the best thing to do is just answer the question at face value and don't volunteer any information. If the lawyer wants me to admit to something or, you know, that he wants me to bring out more information, he can do that on the backside of the deposition once opposing counsel gets through their cross-examination.
It is kind of a unique experience, though, to go into to a courtroom and be grilled by an attorney. I'm sure the first time you did it, it was kind of unnerving, wasn't it? Kind of scary to a degree?
The first time, but yeah, well, not really scary because you have to have, when you do this kind of work, I mean, you just have to have, you have to have thick skin and be able to take whatever comes, you know, and, you know, it's like being a politician. Politicians live in glass houses. And you know what they go through trying to run for office. So an expert, anybody that goes at trial to testify as an expert witness, they're going to have to be able to take the heat. But the thing about it is, I'm defending my work and giving my I'm defending my work as to what I've done, and everything that I've done work wise will support the opinions that I give, and that's what I do. And I give objective opinions because I'm not the advocate, the attorney is. He's the advocate and can do what he wants to do for his client. But all I'm there for, I'm there to work for the attorney and give him an objective professional opinion based on what I've seen in regards to evidentiary facts.
And I understand you're very good at it. I gather you really like what you're doing, this experience, right? Ooh, music a little too loud there.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Gary, I want to thank you for taking the time to come back and talk to us. You explain yourself very well, and sounds like it's very interesting what you do. I should point out, by the way, that Gary has this great website. If you're interested in knowing more about him or to get in touch with him, go to thekilpatrickgrouppa.com. thekilpatrickgrouppa.com. He's based in Jamestown, North Carolina. And, you know, if you're in North Carolina, you need an expert witness in a case, he might be the ideal one to talk to. Gary, this has been fascinating talking to you again. Thank you so much for being with us. It's been great having you as a guest. Okay? We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, sir.
All right?
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You are very, very welcome. You're welcome. Thank you. And a happy new year.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
Well, that's it for today, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We'll see you next time. Till then, take care. Bye for now.